Okay, so we'll cover from today's verse, which is from verse number 27 onwards. We'll cover a little bit background 27. So today's verse begins a different section where Arjuna is going to give five reasons why he will not fight. As we discussed last time, these reasons are very, very systematic, very shastric, and very much appealing. If somebody hears all this, they may say, it's very right, Arjuna should not fight. But Prabhupada in the purports, he enlightens us why this consciousness is not the right consciousness. And then he also, later on also, Krishna defeats all these five reasons Arjuna gives in the first chapter. And another point to note, this first chapter is actually like a background for the rest of the Bhagavad Gita. Because we can understand like the context in which it's speaking. That's why all the different personalities are mentioned, and we covered little bit history of all of them and all those things. And also here, that's why it's called observing the armies. Because here Arjuna is observing the armies from his point of view. He's not like looking from Shastri point of view, or he's not looking from, you know, Krishna's point of view. So this illustrates the end of the first chapter. We can see how if we see things from our point of view, what will happen to us. So we will face the same situation as what Arjuna is facing. He will become bewildered, confused, indecisive, all these things he is going to face. So same thing will happen to us if we see things as from our experience or from our understanding, like that. But instead of that, if we take shelter of Krishna and based on instructions of Gita, if we see things, then it's a spiritual perspective. So that's why it's called observing the armies. So text number 27, we can start. So five reasons, we will give a summary of the all reasons, which verses it covers that at first. So gradually when we go through it, you can get the detailed picture. Text number 27.
No, you want to give the section. So first give them the section.
Okay, first give the sections. Okay. Verse number 28 to 30, Arjuna gives the first reason, compassion. He is now feeling compassionate towards his friends and relatives, and also even the enemies. He's saying, these are all my grandfathers, like parents, all relatives. So I'm feeling compassionate. How can I kill them? So as a devotee, naturally they feel compassionate. So he's saying, out of compassion, I don't want to fight. That's one reason. And from verse number 31 to 35, he gives the reason that he doesn't find any happiness. He doesn't find any happiness either in fighting the war or after the war, either he wins or loses. In both cases, he sees only misery. So that's why he says this nimittani viparitani. He says viparitani means reversals. Yeah, he's seeing everything as opposite. Like you are put in a situation where you expect something, but everything is becoming reverse. So he sees that as a reason. There is no happiness in this war. The second reason. And the third reason he gives from verse number 36 to 38. He says he is afraid of sinful reactions. Like he says that if we kill all these elderly people, so we are not going to even get a shelter in the heaven. And not only that, we are also going to face sinful reactions because of killing people. Because unless elders are there, dharma is not going to come to the younger generation. So people who kill the ancestors, they also get sinful reactions. That's the reason he gives. This is just a brief overview. Later when we go into details. And the next
39 to 43,
fourth reason and the last reason in this chapter, he says the family tradition will get destroyed. So family tradition gets destroyed means like all the men get killed. So women will be exploited. Because of that, women will have unwanted children. And these unwanted children, because they are born in a wrong consciousness, they will also be very wild and very much, you know, problematic to the society. Because of this, the whole society will get regraded. So, I will be cause for all these things, so I don't want to fight. Actually, later on, we'll see Krishna gives, actually, if he doesn't fight, that causes family degradation. We'll see how nicely Krishna tells later chapters. And
this is family culture.
Family tradition. Destruction of family tradition. And the last reason, which comes in the second chapter, it's actually verse 2.6. Here Arjuna says, becomes indecisive. He says, I don't know whether I should fight or whether I should not fight. Because of that, I don't know what to do. I'm confused. So that's the fifth reason he gives.
So final reason, is it just indecisive or he was completely sure that he is not interested in fighting?
No, he becomes confused again. See, so far he was like almost convinced that, okay, this is reason, I don't want to fight. Finally, he comes and says, oh, now I really don't know what to do. I'm very confused.
It's the bewildered.
And then finally surrenders. Krishna says, okay, I'm your student. I surrender unto you. Please tell me what I should do. Then Krishna starts speaking. That's when the real Bhagavad Gita starts.
So real philosophy starts from second chapter. This is just a prelude to the whole Bhagavad Gita. So
actually we have one of the ISKCON temples, they have created a study guide for Bhagavad Gita. There these reasons are mentioned, with also where exactly it's defeated by Krishna. It's a very systematic PDF. We will share, so you can read as much as possible. It's
so we'll start today with the text 27. Together we can recite.
Tantam sanishyasya kaunteya sarvan bandhuna vasthitan kripaya paraya vishto vishiddhan avdam abravir.
I think we should do twice, as Rakesh Prabhu recommended. Like now second time we get it, at least together sing. So let's do it together again.
Tan samishyasya kaunteya sarvan bandhuna vasthitan kripaya paraya vishto visidan idam abravit.
When the son of Kunti, Arjuna, saw all these different grades of friends and relatives, he became overwhelmed with compassion and spoke thus.
So this is the first reason Arjuna is giving, compassion. So on the battlefield, is there any consideration for compassion? So he's already on the battlefield. So is there any place for compassion?
No.
So what happens if we go to a war and in front of the enemy, right? Oh, I don't know. I feel sorry for you. If you start feeling compassion, what happens? You'll get killed. So same thing here. So that's why the Kshatriyas are trained. So how do they get trained? The Kshatriyas, particularly Kshatriyas' duty is to fight, right? So in previous Vedic times, so how they used to get trained? The war means it's all bloodshed, right? So they used to go for hunting. So it was allowed during the Vedic times. So that's why we hear, right? Hunting, all those things, but that was not whimsical. So there was a purpose for all the hunting, and they were allowed to kill the animals. So when they see the blood and all, right, so automatically they get trained. So you don't, first time you go to war and you see blood, you know, you'll be. So the Prabhupada gives an analogy of, or example of a surgeon, like doctor, surgeon. So they cannot, first time they cannot operate somebody, right, like the operation or anything they do, surgery, they cannot do. So when they are in the college, so they go through a training. So that way they get see the blood, dead body and all, right? I have heard many times that people, you know, they operate on the dead body. So automatically they get, so when they become trained, then only they will put on actuals doing the surgery. So same thing here, Arjuna was a well-trained soldier. And he was trained by none other than Dronacharya. He was the greatest warrior. So is Arjuna feeling that, is he showing that cowardness, or why is he feeling that compassion?
Because it's family.
Yes. So when he sees the family member, that's the main reason. He's a Maharathi actually. You know, he has a capacity to fight almost 60,000 warriors at a time. Right? So there is no way. And also he promised that he's going to kill everybody. So there's no way he's showing the cowardness that he's not going to fight or anything. So that's... At least that's what it is.
Okay. We'll go to the next verse. Arjuna uvacha drushve mam svajanam krishna yudhyam samupasthitam sidanti mama gatrani mukam cha parikshyati. Arjuna
uvacha
drushve mam svajanam krishna yudhyam samupasthitam sidanti mama gatrani mukam cha parishushyati.
So actually now the symptoms of, you know, when one becomes overwhelmed with compassion, what happens, that will be given. So we're starting with verse number 28. So first Arjuna is saying,
Arjuna said, my dear Krishna, seeing my friends and relatives present before me in such a fighting spirit, I feel the limbs of my body quivering and my mouth drying up. Purport. Any man who has genuine devotion to the Lord has all the good qualities which are found in godly persons or in the demigods, whereas the non-devotee, however advanced he may be in material qualification by education and culture, lacks in godly qualities.
Okay, we'll pause there, Prabhu. Like, there are different sections and different themes in the purport. So we'll pause and we'll elaborate a little bit, and then we'll go to the next one. So in the first one, what Prabhupada is telling is actually he's paraphrasing a verse which is quoted towards the end of the purport. See, if you see this verse, yasyasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana sarvair gunais tatra samasate sura harau abhaktasya kuto mahadguna manorate nasti davato bahi. So one who has unflinching devotion for the personality of Godhead has all the good qualities of the demigods. But one who is not a devotee of the Lord has only material qualifications that are of little value. This is because he is hovering on the mental plane and is certain to be attracted by the glaring material energy. So this verse is paraphrased by the first four lines. Actually, if you get familiar with reading Srila Prabhupada books, like you can immediately, when you read some sentences, you can identify which verse is this. Where, and then you can mark what verse is this, and it's very nice. So actually somebody researched and said every sentence of Prabhupada you can quote back to scripture. Nothing, he made it on his own. That's, it's so authentic. So here there are two points, right? One is, a person who is a genuine devotee of the Lord, he has all the good qualities of demigods. So so why is it like that? Anybody knows, why would it be like that?
So because our nature, the eternal nature Swarupa is like that, and those who have cultivated the devotional services have revealed those things in them.
Yeah, that's correct, yeah. So basically they are becoming more and more pure. So the pure, these are all pure qualities of the soul, so they become manifested. That's correct. And another point is, actually, as we try to become devotee of the Lord, Krishna personally decorates the devotee with these qualities, because these qualities will make the devotee pleasing to him. It's not the other way around. It's for Krishna's pleasure, he decorates the devotee with the qualities. Like when he sees the devotee being humble, tolerant, Krishna will be happy. It's like decorations. So that's why, we say darshan, right? We have come to take darshan. But actually, it's not only that we are seeing the Lord. Lord is also seeing us. Lord is seeing us, and he is seeing our qualities, how we have grown devotionally, and he is appreciating, and he is getting a lot of pleasure in that. Sometimes we want to, we don't have time, you're going to airport, we don't have time to go take darshan, right? Okay, we don't want to take darshan, but maybe Lord wants to see us, so we should go. So
that's a good way to think.
Yeah. Yeah, and actually one incident of Srila Prabhupada, once Srila Prabhupada was going somewhere on the road. So somebody, some non-devotee on the road, he was talking to his disciples, and so he was saying, look, your master is glowing. Mm-hmm. I think we told like that, right? So Srila Prabhupada, because of his purity, he was so effulgent. Like, we didn't see them, but like it so effulgent, and actually every dealing, every action, it's as if, you know, it's controlled directly by Krishna. It's in pure devotion, offering of pure love to Krishna.
Anybody of you notice anytime, if you see really, you know, somebody who is very spiritual, they're kind of, you know, you can differentiate, like, no, they are kind
Bhumpa
of effulgent.
Swami Maharaj, he looks so different, like, when I saw first time.
No, we are a lot of people, no? You know Ariyulas Prabhu, right? You know how old he is? He's 67. But if you see, you know, how fresh he is always, because his thoughts, the whole thing, his consciousness is all about Krishna and how to give Krishna to others. So that's why, you know, there you can see, actually you can make out, so fresh and, you know, effulgent actually.
And now if you look at the second part of it, whereas a non-devotee, however advanced materially he is, he lacks in godly qualities. So why is it like that?
Because it says in the last paragraph, is anytime we can get distracted or attracted by the material.
Yeah, so he is acting in a mental plane. So mental plane means sometimes I feel good, sometimes I don't feel good. So anytime situation becomes reverse, my qualities go away. Like we see, right, at work or something, some people, they be normal and they feel so good. But sometimes when things go very worse, we can see completely opposite. We think, oh, is this a person who does like this? You can't believe it, right? So immediately it changes. So these are all the qualities they manifest also are within the modes. So it's not emanating from the, it's still emanating from the soul, but it's covered by the modes. So as the modes change, the behavior changes. But whereas a pure person, he will always be tolerant. Like really, if he has that spiritual quality manifested, he will always be tolerant in all situations.
But how we can bridge that gap? Like if we are like I will consider my example, mostly I will act like this. If situation are good, I will be good.
Yes.
If situation is bad, definitely I will be in bad. Right?
Yes.
So how to start changing this mode?
Because yeah.
What we should practice or what should we
yeah.
do?
So, like for that, so it's like, you know, chicken and egg problem. So for that, we know that we have to go towards the first one. So the first one is, as we become genuine devotee of the Lord, all these good qualities manifest. So we should focus our, we should invest time in that. How do I become a genuine devotee of the Lord? What does it mean? Like, what are the characteristics of genuine devotees of the Lord? Genuine devotees of the Lord, 24 hours, they try to think of Krishna, they try to serve Krishna. Okay, that's the goal. So at my level, how I can gradually come there? Maybe I can, maybe half an hour I dedicate to thinking of Krishna by chanting his name. We can start like that. So that gradually, but then see, it's not only that when we become full pure devotee, that's when these qualities will be there. As I mentioned, as we slowly approach Krishna, Krishna gradually decorates the devotee with qualities. We need not wait for, you know, like 60 years for perfection and then we start seeing results. We'll start seeing results from the day one. So that's the amazing thing about bhakti.
So it is said that, you know, if you take one step towards Krishna, Krishna takes 10 steps towards you. So he's so merciful, he's just waiting. So when you really, you know, if you show that sincere desire, then automatically, you know, Krishna will make sure, he will arrange, you know, all other things he will put together, like, you know, how the puzzles he put together, like that. And the main thing in, as you said, it is a very practical. So everything starts with association first. So without association, you won't be able to get. And we have many times we have told, right? If you want to become a drunkard, the easy way is to just go with wherever, you know, they assemble, you go there. So same thing here, spiritual thing also, you have to go to a place where they really sincerely practice. There are so many schools, right? I'm pretty sure there are so many schools of bhakti, but they are all, you know, like hodgepodge. Prabhupada used to say hodgepodge. They pick something which, you know, they feel good, but something which is a little bit harder or something, if they have to give up something, they won't take that part. So that's why Prabhupada initially only said, right, you have to take Bhagavad Gita as it is. You cannot, you know, leave something, or, you know, you cannot just pick something what you want. You need to follow it. So first thing, yeah, the first step will be, at least this is my experience. So first we come to association. Then gradually, I'm pretty sure many of you all came like that, first step. And the next step, you all wanted to take some class or wanted to know more about Bhagavad Gita or something. Because without knowledge, it becomes?
Sentiment.
Sentiment. So if you follow something, if you don't know why you are doing that, then if somebody asks, you know, oh, you are going to temple, you know, you are chanting. It's what is all about chanting, or you know, why you are spending so much time in temple. So if you don't know the proper reasons, then it becomes, they think you are a sentiment. So you will not be setting the right example. So gradually, so when you associate, then the next step will be, you know, you take some service. Usually, you know, devotees get attracted to do some service, seva, because that's inbuilt in us. We are eternal servants. So we always have the tendency to serve somebody or the other. Whether you are going to serve your family member, if you are not going to serve your family member, you are going to serve your boss at work, right? Always we have the tendency because we are eternal servants. We can never become master. So that's why we start doing some seva. Practical seva, as you all of you came to, you know, Ananda Mela, here with Narasimha Chaturthi, I remember still all of you were engaging in some service. Then, so those are the steps. Minor, it may be very, you know, minor steps, but Krishna will, you know, he will reciprocate. So he will give you more service, everything, you know, he puts together. So
actually, there is a verse which gives the different stages of bhakti, like how it starts and how it gradually fructifies. So it starts with ato shraddha tata sadhu sangha. Shraddha, it starts with little faith. So suddenly we are going on the road, we see some devotees going and we appreciate them. So appreciation is the beginning of faith, because it's a favorable action towards Krishna. So then Krishna notes that and gives us a chance where we come closer to his devotees. So it starts with that little faith. Maybe something happened in our life, some devotee helped us, then we're like, oh, some, so these are some people, good people, I want to go there, right? Ato shraddha tata sadhu sangha. After that, what happens? You want to be with these people. You have some favorable impression about these people. I want to be with these people. And you slowly you say, oh, I want to be exactly like them. How they wear dhoti, how they wear tilak, how they eat, how they, I want to be like them. Then you start doing bhajana kriya. Bhajana kriya is devotional service. So you chant, read scriptures. This all the aspects of devotion. We know this 9 aspects of devotion service, right? After bhajana kriya, then anartha nivriti. This is the longest period actually. All this unwanted anartha is anartha. This anartha means unwanted things. All these unwanted things from the heart, they gradually go away. Lust, anger, greed, pride, illusion. All these 6 enemies, right? These are there, which are like strangling our soul for so many lifetimes. So they gradually go away. So this may take many, many years, but it's possible. Prabhupada promised it's possible in one lifetime if we are sincere. If we are not sincere, actually it is said you can be chanting Hare Krishna for millions of lifetimes, still it may not be possible because you are still attached, you are not letting go. Right? So then anartha nivriti, after that what happens? There will be nishtha. Nishtha means firm faith. Unshakable faith, whatever happens, like how Prahlad Maharaj, whatever happens, your faith in the Lord, that Lord is protecting you, is not shaken. Now our faith is so brittle. Okay, today we do good, but suddenly something happens at work, manager scolds, or we don't get promotion or whatever, then we start saying, oh Krishna, I'm doing so many things for you, what are you doing for me? Right? So that's the level of our consciousness, because we are not,
it's the contract,
yeah,
basis.
That's why Prabhupada later on says, we think God is order supplier. Like, we place an order and God is going to supply the order. So that is like nishtha. Whatever happens, whatever situation, material situations happens, our faith in the Lord doesn't get disturbed. Right? Nishtha. Then, asakti. Right? Asakti. Nishtha.
Yeah.
Asakti means excessive attachment to the Lord. Intense attachment. Whatever you do, tell in detail all this because we are not there. But whatever we have heard is like intense attachment towards the Lord. Then asakti, then ruchi, taste. Great taste in the holy name. Now we think, right? Oh, how much ever I'm chanting, what is this? It's like, you know, it's becoming very mechanical and so that taste comes at that level. So we have long way to go until that time. But what takes us there is that chanting. So we should not let go of that. Then we get the genuine taste. And then bhava. Bhava is the place where the body manifests symptoms of love. Like Later on, Arjuna also experiences that. He has hair standing on and tears falling from his eyes, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all these great Vaishnava Acharyas, many pure devotees manifested these symptoms. Right? Like where they see the Lord, they faint, all those things. Of course, these are not things which we imitate artificially. These are genuine feelings of, because of intense love for the Lord, the body also, you know, expresses that love in that way. Then bhava, and final stage is prema. Is a bhava is considered as a, you know, small ray of light of sun, but whereas prema is a full sun like that. Prema is like much more intense than bhava. It is said actually this material body cannot take that intensity of that love. So devotees finally after all the service is over, they are just waiting for to leave the body so that they can get the spiritual body to serve the, to give the Lord the full love they have in their heart. So only the spiritual body is appropriate to exhibit that love for the Lord. So this verse covers systematic stages, how bhakti develops. Actually all these stages, what grows is the faith. What is the aspect which is growing among all these things is faith. And the faith is nurtured, as Prabhu said, in association of devotees and by practicing the processes of devotional service like chanting, hearing, reading, all these things. These things nurture the faith.
So don't be discouraged that, you know, it's a long process or it has too many steps. It's a very gradual process and you won't even notice, like, you know, when we go different levels. We won't even, because it's natural to us. Right now, whatever we are, it's kind of all artificial. But these steps, whatever we said, anatta, nivritti, asakti, all those things, this is very natural to the eternal soul. So, we do it naturally. You don't, you know, nobody, no force or pressure. You won't feel it.
And when first I heard this verse, what appealed to me is that, usually the notion we have about bhakti is like, you know, some feeling we have, something like that, right? Very like kind of goes towards sentimentalism or like, oh, we can't define bhakti. It's like, how can I identify somebody who has more bhakti versus less? But when you hear this, you see this is very scientific. There are stages, there are qualities somebody manifests, there are, you know, things somebody feels, how do they manifest in with respect to their dealings with others. Everything is given. It's like, you know, check and balance. You can say which stage you are and how to go scientifically from one stage to other stage. So like that.
So if you understand at least most of the principles of Bhagavad Gita, you will never be cheated spiritually by somebody. I'm pretty sure you would have read or saw the news, no? Many times, you know, so many gurus, they cheat people, they take money away, right? Why is it happening? Because people doesn't have the knowledge part. Because naturally we are very soft-hearted, right? As a devotees, everybody's spirit soul is a very soft-hearted. So when somebody comes and, you know, gives some information about, you know, that's how they misuse. Because they know people are very soft-hearted. So they give some portion of it and they misuse it. So if you understand some principles of Bhagavad Gita, at least, you know, most of it, then easily, you know, when you talk to somebody or somebody comes to, you know, take your money away or something, you know, it happens. It's you will never notice. Some people can come and tell so many things and they can take your money for spiritual progress. And you will be so soft-hearted, you are ready to give away everything. So if you have knowledge, then you can discriminate. What is right, what is... We'll cover it slowly.
So I was just relating like how I can, you know, see in my life how I, like, let's say, is it applicable to me? Like, I was just trying to see some examples which I can share, which may like help. So initially when I came, right, I remember like when I was told like we have to offer bhoga to the Lord, everything. So I was very very like so much in modes of ignorance, passion, even still now, but maybe something's changed a little bit. So but there even more too much, so very very impatient. So I remember still like when I used to offer, like you take a plate, you put at least maybe 2-3 minutes, you at least say Hare Krishna Mantra 3 times, right? That also it's like when am I going to get up from here and go somewhere? The impatience, so much like, so much. And then now after so many years, hopefully things have changed and Prabhu should probably attest to that little bit. Yeah, because it's not because of me, but because of the potency of the process.
You should always remember that. That's very important. It's not our own effort. Spirituality, it's not our own effort. Without somebody's mercy, means somebody senior or, you know, without their mercy or Krishna's mercy, our effort is useless. We cannot see the materially we are trained that we are independent.
And we are the doer.
And we are the doer. Right? Everything is in our control. But in spirituality, we say we are always dependent on Krishna and the devotees. So, you know, we are always, I remember still, you know, you make your own path. Like, you know, you should never take a path to somebody, like how to make advancement, right? Materially, if you want to advance, if somebody has already gone through that path, or, you know, they say, right? So you try to find your own path, you create your path so people can follow you. That's the mentality or the education we have got. But in spirituality, it's very different. In spirituality, you don't have to create anything of your own. Everything is there. That's what. So Krishna, each principle, how to lead life, everything is there. But the main thing is we have to just follow. That's the only thing. So any point of time, you should always remember that. And we will never be a doer. That's, you know, always keep in mind that, yeah.
So another thing I can relate is, like, initially before I was already in Microsoft by the time. So I was as a tester or something, and then after 2 years there, suddenly, like, somehow I was not getting along there. Something happened, manager said, like, something is not working, maybe you should leave the team, like that. The first time I ever experienced something. Otherwise, essentially, from the childhood, I have this conditioning, I don't have good relationships. So I think that, especially I was just becoming a devotee. So, you know, initial stages, you think already you're a pure devotee, right? Everybody is a non-devotee. Yeah, so that's all. Enough, it was enough for me, and I had to leave the team. And now this year review, my manager was telling, like, we are very fortunate to have you in our team. So reliable, so accountable. We are so happy to have you. So I was just thinking, like, it's all, you know, mercy of spiritual master and devotees, like how they can change a person. That's what I was telling, right? 25 years, 26 years, there is no change of heart. We did so many things, or maybe some called pious activities, but there is no transformation. But here we can see to ourselves that we are progressing towards a path where we are more peaceful, more happy, right? And more beneficial to others. Now somebody would actually like to be around us rather than, you know, run away from us all the time. So, other point about this is, like, actually this verse also relates to a verse in Bhagavad Gita, which is 5.7. Like, why it is so, it's given there. A devotee becomes very... So 5.7 is Yoga Yukta Vishuddhatma Vijitatma Jitendriya Sarva Bhutatma Bhutatma Kurvan Apina Lipyate. One who works in devotion, who is a pure soul and who controls his mind and senses, is dear to everyone and everyone is dear to him. Though always working, such a man is never entangled. So here we can see how pure devotee, because he controls his minds and senses and because he loves Krishna, he becomes dear to everyone because he never offends anybody. He just goes on doing his service to Krishna and he sees everyone as part and parcel of Krishna. So he also loves everyone. That's why everyone becomes dear to him. And how he becomes dear to everyone? Because he always serves them, everybody would like to be with them. Like that. So both are true. That's why he has all these good qualities. Because he is always serving others. And another verse also is given, like 5.18, Vidya Vinaya Sampanne Brahmani Gavi Astini Sunicheva Sapakicha Pandita Samadarshana. 5.18, the humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, see with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahmana a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater. So a person, realized person, he sees everyone equally. That means he's seeing the soul within all of them. So that's the spiritual vision. Okay, we just covered four lines of the purpose.
So here, right? So if you see the second line of Arjuna Vacha, Dristavenu Swajanam, right? Swajana. So that's the main reason why Krishna, like Arjuna, after seeing Bhishma and Dronacharya, so he felt compassion. Because this one, Swajanam. What is Swajanam means?
My people.
So what is that? My people means? What, on what platform are you seeing them?
Material.
Bodily conception of life. So whenever we have that bodily conception of life, then? So always there will be confusion or bewilderment. So that's what that was, right? 518. But this is opposite, right? Here, 518, what conception is this? The humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, see with an equal vision a learned and a gentle brahmana, a cow, elephant, dog, or a dog eater, outcast. So that's a spiritual conception. So in the material conception, it said that our mind becomes narrow. So we just see only based on our bodily platform. So this is my parents, right? This is my friend, or this is my brother, father. That's all we relate. So if something happens to somebody, right? We don't get affected easily, right? If somebody neighbor, something happens to neighbor, we don't easily get affected. But if something happens to our relatives or our family member, it affects us. Because we are on bodily platform. Right? Makes sense? But the opposite is spiritual conception. The spiritual person is broad-minded. So he sees, as the 518 says.
Should he get affected by everybody or should he not get affected by
everybody? We'll come to the practical application.
So that's the pure... the vision, actually, spiritual person, that's how he says. Because everybody is related to Krishna. And Krishna, we know, he is the seed-giving father of everybody. That's the verse 14.4, if you see. It should be understood that all species of life, O son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in this material nature, and I am the seed-giving father. So Krishna is the only father, right? According to this verse, he is saying Krishna is the seed-giving father of every living entity, whether it can be a 8.4 million species, including human beings. So that means if you have that vision, then if something happens to anybody, even an ant or something, so you will get affected. So we should come to, that's why the Krishna consciousness or Bhagavad Gita trains us to become broad-minded. Basically Krishna conscious person. So where you can see everybody as, you know, relatives. Also I was looking for some reference. I heard in one of the lectures. So it's in Maha Upanishad. It's just for reference. So it's 6th chapter, 72 verse. It says that only small men discriminate. Means he says one is a relative, right? Like that, other is a stranger. So they discriminate. But who magnanimously says the entire family is a spiritual person. Entire world is my family. So he is a spiritual person.
Vasudhaiva Kutumbikam. Yeah, that verse. Yeah. So regarding Mataji's, that leads us into practical application, right? So we have this material vision, we understand it's very narrow and it causes this discrimination, like me and mine. All this, because of this only, all these wars happen. Either at a family level or nation level, it's all because of that. And that's a narrow-minded vision. Lagu Chetasa. Lagu Chetasa. It's called Lagu Chetasa. Chetasa is consciousness. Lagu is very narrow. whereas the other side is broad-mindedness. We think the whole world is our family. It's called Udara Charitam. Udara Charitam. So, and in that consciousness, we see everyone as part and parcel of Krishna. But and at the same time, we feel their pain. It's called, that's why they are called pure devotees. They are actually Paradukka Dukki. They feel sorrow when they see somebody suffering. Right? But at the same time, they for themselves, they are very happy. Because they are so much in love with Krishna, they are getting all the happiness they need. But their only distress is to see others suffer. That's their only reason actually they are even staying here. To relieve others' suffering. By what? What is the only solution to relieve suffering in this world? To propagate Krishna consciousness. To give people Krishna. To bring people closer to Krishna. That's the only reason they are remaining in this world. They have attained pure love. Even Prabhupada, right? At the age of 67, actually, he is pretty much retired. Family life is finished. Everything is over. There is no need for him to go anywhere. Many of his godbrothers, everybody, at that time, it's a taboo to leave and cross the oceans. To cross the oceans, go somewhere. It's like, you know, it's like as if you cannot do that, like that. But he said, no, I have this, but what about others? They don't have it, right? I have to give them. So, and to live in Vrindavan is the goal for any spiritual transcendentalist. Because that is the where like Krishna's pastimes, everything happened, right? He left that place and he came all over, all the way to US. For what? To give Krishna to all of us. So, and then he suffered like 2 heart attacks. And then after that first year, it's such a struggle. So many, somebody tried to kill him. If you read Lilamrita, like you will never leave ISKCON. You will never leave Krishna consciousness. After seeing how much sacrifice Prabhupada went through to give Krishna to us, we feel like as a gratitude, at least I should sincerely try to follow. He has taken so much pain to give it to us. Now we have come, so let us at least try a little bit, at least for us to follow. Maybe eventually we'll give it to somebody.
The difference is like feeling pity or compassion. Like if somebody is drowning, you don't jump. You have to take them out.
Yes,
if
yes.
You are compassionate. So that's what the spiritual masters are.
Yeah. So actually that distress, even though seemingly that person isn't, Paradukka Dukki means I am also in distress, seeing others' distress. But that is in pure spiritual platform. So it's not like, you know, how material distress where we feel sorrow, morose and we like to, you know, just close the door and sit inside. It's not like that. This inspires to do more service to Krishna and more to others. So we should not feel like, you know, that's not the state we want to be, like where we feel burdened by suffering of all the world. It's not the way to see. We have developed compassion for people of the world. That's the stage. It's like pure compassion by which we want to give our life for them. So such a selfless platform.
As such, Arjuna, just after seeing his kinsmen, friends and relatives on the battlefield, was at once overwhelmed by compassion for them who had so decided to fight amongst themselves. As far as his soldiers were concerned, he was sympathetic from the beginning, but he felt compassion even for the soldiers of the opposite party, foreseeing their imminent death. And while he was so thinking, the limbs of his body began to quiver and his mouth became dry. He was more or less astonished to see their fighting spirit. Practically, the whole community, all blood relatives of Arjuna, had come to fight with him. This overwhelmed a kind devotee like Arjuna. Although it is not mentioned here, still one can easily imagine that not only were Arjuna's bodily limbs quivering and his mouth drying up, but he was also crying out of compassion. Such symptoms in Arjuna were not due to weakness, but to his soft-heartedness, a characteristic of a pure devotee of the Lord.
So we can start. So we covered, I think, most of this thing. So here, we can see this is the first time Arjuna is showing his weakness. right? As we said before, he was all the time, he was a powerful fighter. So this is the first time he's showing weakness of due to the compassion.
And what Prabhupada characterizes his reason for this weakness? Because of his soft-heartedness rather than cowardice.
Cowardice, or because, you know, due to fear or something.
Yeah. Teacher also told, like, he was, you know, he is very, very practical. Like, we do Bhagavad Gita classes, but he gives very, very practical steps as to, like, how to deal with devotees and many, many practical instructions for our spiritual life. So he was telling one day that, you know, devotees by nature very, very soft-hearted. So because they're so soft-hearted, they have come to Krishna. Because that, you know, the heart is softened enough. It's like, you know, when the heart is like butter, Krishna steals it. So the heart has become softened enough that they have become attracted to Krishna. So after they have come like that, if you anybody hurts them, they are going to get hurt because they're so soft. So be careful in association of devotees. Don't hurt anybody. They are very, very soft people. They get hurt, and later on we'll see if devotees get hurt, Krishna never forgives them. The person who offends the devotees, even he can even forgive a person who offends him, but not a person who offends his devotees. That's what we'll see, why Krishna was hell bent on having this war for the sake of his devotees.
So are you saying, just going back to her comment, in terms of practical application, the compassion, the feeling for your kinsmen, your relations?
Okay.
Practically, how do you apply it or not apply it? Right?
Okay, so we very good point. We covered that aspect, which is like spiritual vision, how to deal with everyone. But we have to, yeah, that's a very good point. We have to cover. Okay, now we are with family. We have husband, we have kids, we have parents, relatives, and we have certain conception of dealing with them in a certain way. Mostly, if you categorize based on scriptures, it would be mostly material conception, like bodily conception. So how to move that from bodily conception towards spiritual conception while we are staying at the place we are at? So what does it take, or what are the things we need to do to change that? So we'll cover briefly that, right? So
yeah. That was an exception.
So what did we discuss about how to distinguish some action to be material versus spiritual? What distinguishes an action which is material versus spiritual?
It's offered as prasad, or offered, done in a devotional spirit.
If there's any expectation in return, then it's material, it's not spiritual.
Yeah, if it's for me, it's material. If it's for Krishna, it's spiritual. Okay, more subtly, is the consciousness that differentiates both of them. Yeah, basically, who is the ultimate beneficiary of this action? Is it me? Or is it Krishna? That's what is the pivotal thing. That's what differentiates love versus lust. Love means for Krishna, lust means for me.
That's why it's called Krishna consciousness. So finally it boils down to consciousness. Whether, you know, whatever we do, is it finally taking towards Krishna, or it's taking towards your own self? So that's the pivotal point. Like, you know, is it for Krishna or it's for our own sake?
So now we have family members, everything, right? So as a family member, if our consciousness is how I can help my family members come closer to Krishna, right, then we are acting spiritually, because then who is the beneficiary here? Krishna, right? We are trying to bring our wife or husband, our children, closer to Krishna. So Krishna is the beneficiary, and I am just playing a part of facilitating that. Like, as a husband, I will go outside work, get money so that they have enough, you know, food to eat, clothes to wear, so peacefully they can chant. So that is the essence, actually. The essence of a relationship is how much we are helping our family members become Krishna conscious. That's what changes the dynamics. In material consciousness, we would be like, how much I can use my family for my enjoyment. Like, okay, how much I can take them to a movie which I like, how much I can take them to a game or a party, or so many things, right? So it's all about me. But here, how much I can, you know, slowly, if they're not favorable, how I can, you know, slowly bring them to Krishna. Maybe gradually I can bring them to temple, some cultural programs, some prasadam. We are at least so fortunate that husband and wife mostly are favorable, but they are like some incidents where husband is not favorable, wife is favorable. So what do we do in those cases, right? So that the thing is, we should sincerely pray and see how Krishna, how can I bring my husband closer to you.
So actually scriptures are even more very clear, straightforward. It says that, you know, if you, the real, you know, way to serve your family or, you know, family members, it starts only when you inspire or guide them to take spirituality. So if you don't inspire or if you don't guide them to take spirituality, that means you are really not taking care of your family. You are guiding them in a wrong direction. It's very clear in scriptures. So that's why, you know, it's very, you know, practical things. But yeah, it's a very, everybody should remember it's a gradual process. So we cannot say today, you know, tomorrow, from tomorrow I'm cutting off all, you know, things, whatever I'm doing. You cannot do that. So I'm requesting all of you to, it's an introspection process. So you go introspect, you can see your daily activities or, you know, your daily things, whatever we do, is it helping you and your family members to bring them close, make them God consciousness or make them spiritual person? If that's happening, that means you're on the right path. If not, if you're taking away from God consciousness, Krishna consciousness, that means you are leading them in a wrong path, even you and your family members. So that everybody can introspect. So in this connection, we heard Prabhupada giving example of where one family member, very wealthy family member, he used to work day and night, and he became, you know, very rich, but he didn't have even a time to enjoy whatever he was earning. So at almost old age, he died. Right, so then the next time in his next life, based on his karma, he was born and he built a, you know, he's a wealthy man, he had built a big house, everything. So he was born in front of his house, that whatever, wherever he has constructed, just in front of his house, he was born as a son of a cobbler, you know, the, who stitches shoes and all, right? So he was born there as a, you know, son. So then somehow he could recall his past, you know, the previous life. Some people get that, somehow the, this thing, the power to recall the previous life. So this guy, you know, he could make out that, you know, he built that house, that was his son who was grown up and also. So one day he went and he told his son that, you know, oh, I am your father, why are you wasting money, or something like that, you know. He told, he is a small kid, but he went and told, I am your father, don't you recognize? And that person, you know, who, can you imagine, you, somebody coming and telling you that, you know, I was your father or something, right? You will get. So then he was beaten. So Prabhupada says that sort, if everything, whatever we do, if everything is on the material platform, it's all temporary. Material means temporary. So that means the taints at that life. So next life, that's what happened to him, right? When he went and told the I, this is what you're doing, he was beaten. So anything we do on the material platform, it's temporary and it's going to finish at the end of your life. So we have to make sure, whatever we do, it's all, some point of time, it gets related to, connects to Krishna. Then it will stay
then
forever.
It's eternal benefit.
It's eternal benefit.
So scriptures say a very nice way to relate to how family members come together. They say, like, as in an ocean, small twigs are there. Because of the waves, they come together sometimes. They stay together for some time. And after some time, they disperse. It's like that. Like that, souls come together as, you know, husband and wife, children. They stay for one lifetime. Then again they go. Next life, who is my husband? Who is my child? Who is my mother? Last life, who is my husband? Who is my wife? Nobody knows. Like, it's not the same person. And actually, there is very nice pastime of Chitraketu Maharaj. So he had a long... He is very, very pious and everything he had. He's a king. He had all opulence, all, you know, piety, everything. Is a great devotee. Only thing he was missing in his life was he didn't have a child. And so many wives he married, I don't remember the exact count, it could be like some thousands of wives he tried marrying, but none of them could give a progeny, because that's the karma, he couldn't take it. But still he was trying. Finally he did some tapasya, and somebody blessed him that, okay, you're going to get a child, but the child will give you, he will be the source of your happiness and distress. So his name will be Harsha Shoka. So happiness and distress. He said, oh, how can a child could cause a distress? He's like so much hankering for this desire for so many lifetime, so many years. Like, how could it be possible? It's okay. I'll deal with distress later. Let me get first. So he has a child. And the first wife gives this child. And because of that, and because of his intense eagerness to have a child, as soon as the child is born, he started favoring the first wife. Otherwise, earlier he used to balance everyone. But now he used to focus so much on first wife, just stay with his wife and kid. So all the other wives felt neglected. And because of that, one day they plotted and they give poison and they kill the child out of envy. So then the child is dead and the mother and father comes to receive the child and mother cries saying, child, wake up, why are you sleeping so much? You have to attend your duties. She becomes like insane and the father can't believe. Anyway, so then Chitraketu Maharaj, now he realizes child is dead but he doesn't accept. So then Narada Muni comes and then he says, okay, I'm going to bring your child. Let's see what he says. So Narada Muni comes and says, okay, child, you have gone. Your father, parents are here. You come for a brief moment, I am going to give you life, you stay with them. So the child comes back and then he says, what you are talking, which father, which mother you are telling about, in which life? In every life, I had so many mothers, so many fathers. Why are you telling my father, my mother? Then Chitraketu Maharaj realizes the spiritual nature of this whole thing. Like, oh, what an illusion I was in. I thought this is my son and I am like doing like this. Then he started more favorable. Then Narada Muni spoke spirituality. Then he took it up seriously at that time. So that's the
the moral
example of like how brutal, like these things are such true, but we don't spend time thinking about these. Like we are so busy living our life the way we are. So but when we hear these things, we get shaken up. It's like, oh wow, am I supposed to do something with this life?
And we have heard many times, right? Like, the real thing, the moral of the whole thing is, on the spirituality, you love Krishna. The Swajana means my family and all, right? So the real Swajana means it's loving Krishna. So if you love Krishna, it's like loving everyone else. The analogy is, can you
remember any analogy?
Root.
Yes. So that's the analogy Prabhupada quotes. So if you
water.
So tree, right? You water the root tree, then all the branches. So we are all like branches. Branches, flowers, leaves, everybody, right? So we cannot satisfy other person. Have you realized so far? Even our own wife or husband, you cannot never satisfy fully.
You yourself cannot get satisfied. Dog chasing the tail, you never can.
So you can imagine, that's what the condition is.
You can never get satisfied. You just have one thing, it's like mind immediately, it's like, okay. You just go to the store, get one thing. Immediately, it's like the mind is saying, maybe I didn't need it, why did I buy it? That's guilt. And then you feel okay, and then the next minute you feel, oh, maybe instead of this I should have got that one.
so much we can witness
the mind saying, going, yeah.
There should be some tonic, okay, mind sleep for a while.
Mind is
Krishna consciousness.
Mind is more powerful than
wind.
Arjuna says in next chapters, it's more powerful than a wind. So can you control the wind? There's no way. So how can we control the mind? So it has to be trained in proper consciousness. That's the only practical way to do it.
So how to train the mind? By hearing the holy name. That's the practical way to train the mind.
There's no other, yeah.
So like concluding that spiritual conception about the family, our Acharya Bhakti Vinod Thakur, he is given as one of the, you can see one of the photo in the on the temple altar. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur is a grihastha. We discussed about him one time, right? Like he's a church magistrate and he had a family of 10 children. So he said, and he's a very, very realized acharya. He wrote so many books. Accomplished acharya. So he told, like, one day when I returned home, I see my house turned into Vaikuntha. Because I see all my family members are engaged in Krishna service. Somebody is singing, somebody is stitching, somebody is cooking, then what do you see? That everybody is engaged in Krishna service. That's what you see in Vaikuntha. So that's what his vision is like. Now all these people are not for my satisfaction, but they are for Krishna's satisfaction. That's what he's seeing. So that's the vision we want to have one day.
And to create the consciousness, we don't have to give up anything, whatever we are doing currently. So that's also misconception saying, you know, spirituality means we have to give up things we are doing, you have to take up some things. No, that's wrong. So you keep doing whatever you are doing, but only thing is how you use it. You are working, but where are you putting that money, or what are you doing with that money? So like that, there are a lot of practical things, but that's what it is. So you should never give up saying, you know, oh, I have to work for somebody else, I will not work from tomorrow. No, I will depend on Krishna. That's wrong, that's false. That's a false idea to think.
That's what Arjuna is going to tell.
You will cover very practical.
Do your duties.
Yes. So Arjuna is a pandita, he's a scholar. So he is giving so nice points, right? But then Krishna is the best man to defeat his argument. So he will give all that. So the 28, right? I think we covered only two verses.
Yes.
That's okay. It's a very important one. So here Arjuna on the battlefield, once he sees, he takes charge of the situation. So he starts thinking from his own vision. He starts seeing from his own vision. So then what happens if you start seeing through your own vision? Confusion, bewilderment. That's why we always need to take, you should approach a spiritual person who is very learned, or you need to, or also you need to take shelter of scriptures. So when you do that, then when you have a right proper knowledge, then you can make a right decision. You will never get confused, or you will never get bewildered. So that's the, I could say that's the most important things here. Okay, I think we can, it's 8:20, so we can stop and we can do. So from last week we started one round of japa, so we can do one round of japa and